Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Johnson, I asked him to take the night off because I wanted to make room for Vin Armani, who is joining us here. Joining Mark, you've never actually met Vin. Did you meet him at an Acapulco?
Nope. I feel you look familiar to me, though, so... Well, but I've
seen.
Well, there's a lot of reasons why you look familiar.
Then we talked way back at 2017 Anarchapulco. I had you on the show at that time, and I think Mark, you were out doing jujitsu with Roger Veer at that moment. So that's why the paths didn't cross.
I was sick at the time too, so it's best that we didn't meet. Then you could have got a cold.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and you didn't make it out this year to Anarchapulco.
No.
Because you were in the middle of planning your move to New Hampshire.
That's right.
At that time.
That and is correct.
You've been here, what, about a month? 3 weeks? How long have you been here now?
I think it's actually, it's more than a month. It's probably about 5 weeks at this point. Yeah.
5 weeks in New Hampshire. Having moved from Vegas, having ended your career as a gigolo.
I think moving to New Hampshire, you basically retire yourself as a gigolo. I mean, whether I want it or not, I think I'm basically retired at this point.
That sounds accurate.
I don't imagine there's that much business out here for that.
Not like Vegas, that's for sure.
You were on a Showtime series.
I feel like there's a lot of congruity here because I spent a lot of time in corporate America getting effed.
I just saw this story in my Facebook feed and I thought it'd be interesting to talk about it.
Okay.
So apparently you guys are very familiar with the controversy going on with the NFL and the whole kneeling thing for the national anthem.
Is that still going on?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's like old news at this point, isn't it? I didn't know there was
I thought the battle lines had been drawn and the troops went back to their bivouacs.
What's the latest development? Because, I mean, it seems like it's been 2 years since Colin Kaepernick, I believe it was.
Yeah, it was him.
Took a knee and then there was all this support and hate and all of that happened. I mean, that was like 2 years ago,
it
right?
It was 2 years ago,
right.
Yeah.
Right, yep. He talks about how he's upset about the police, and then everybody says, "But the military." Like, I'm not talking about the military, but the military. It's the strangest argument.
So, what's going on now? What are the more recent developments?
Well, a couple months ago, Donald Trump talked about how he wished the NFL would fire people who don't stand for the national anthem. That was one thing, but apparently, the NFL is talking about the possibility of. If the who doesn't stand for a national anthem, they will have a 15-yard in-game penalty
towards
them. It just says if someone on the team decides to take a knee, then they're going to punish the entire team for the 15-yard
penalty.
Just like
grade
penalty.
School.
So it's
like where one person in class.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying. You took the words out of my mouth on that one.
It sounds like they're trying to make some kind of hazing occur.
I got a story about hazing too. If you want to talk about that, all right, AC. What else did you want to say about it? Go ahead.
Yeah, like the thing about it is, I kind of a little more on this whole kneeling thing. You know, the people who get upset over these, butt hurt snowflake conservatives. It's like, you know what? I mean, I'm not into sports. I don't care. But if I did, I would personally be bothered by it because, the thing that would bother me personally would be the whole nationalism, flag waving, and the military worship. That would be bothered me, but it wouldn't bother me to the point where it's like, I'm not going to watch football anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'd still watch it. It's like, I just don't care. It's like, and you think these people, these fascists that get upset over this, you think they could just, roll their eyes like you were talking about in the last segment and just get on. But no, and because they made such a big deal on what Colin Kaepernick did, it blew up into this huge thing to where even Donald Trump has reared his ugly head by saying they should be fired.
Well, it makes people very uncomfortable. The idea of breaking out of the mold and
it's the one true religion in the United States is
patriotism.
Patriotism, yeah.
Well, football has become so much a part of the state at this point. I mean, I think it would be fair to say that the Super Bowl is a national holiday, that it is a national holiday. It's part of the religion.
Pretty much.
You look at the ads during that period of time, besides the typical, what you would call the typical American cultural icons that are there, tons of ads for the military, the Air Force, Marines. I mean, the Marines ads are all over football games, which is the thing that bothered me so much with Colin Kaepernick, was that here you go, you've been playing this entire time and you're worried about, I mean, it really did devolve into a very sort of racially divisive issue, but it's like you were happy to be standing this whole time during your entire career, and you've got Air Force jets flying overhead, yep, while innocent brown people in other places, including American citizens, are being killed by drones.
At least one of them, yep.
So I didn't see, and the military is being advertised right over the top. I don't see you kneeling for that. I don't see you demanding that they take the ads down for that. So to me, that like this is a very hollow expression, and the expression that came back from the other side is such a hollow expression. Yep. It's entertainment. It's professional wrestling, really.
Then you were just about to tell us a story regarding Colin Kaepernick.
Colin Kaepernick. Yes, which as an individual who's a multiracial guy, right, half mm-hmm. half Bible, he's half black, half white. An interesting story, and to preface it, I would say that it's unfortunate that the issue of police violence became racialized, partly, and really in many ways blew up, and this issue became divisive when he really had an opportunity to unite some people around the fact that police violence is a problem no matter what race you are. And
exactly.
And him in particular is that, and most people don't know this about him, while he is biracial, he was given up for adoption. I think he was born in somewhere in the northern Midwest. I want to say either Minneapolis or Milwaukee. He was given up for adoption and ended up in the Central Valley, adopted by a white family.
Okay.
Completely white family in a town that's like maybe 2% black.
Okay.
Raised around an agricultural town, they couldn't have children, and they had so they adopted him. Then they actually wound up having two more kids after that. He was raised by this all white family, treated fantastic, taken through very lovingly all white coaches in a mainly white town. I was raised in Southern California. I was raised in a mainly Latino place. Obviously, I thankfully was able to spend a lot of time with my father, so I had that experience. But I also went I went to Howard University, which is a, you know, historically black university.
Yep.
And getting there, it's not like I had been raised in Atlanta or Chicago in a black neighborhood. And so getting around really all black people for the first time, not in a mixed or environment, and there being a degree of militancy and some Afrocentricness, and of course you want to explore that aspect of your culture. I mean, it's like it doesn't matter where you're from. If you're Irish and you end up back in Ireland, you're going to want to explore what is this aspect of my culture if you're going to university in Ireland and all of this, right?
So I think especially when you're younger, you're trying to figure out what you are in the world.
Exactly.
Sometimes you can look back rather than looking forward. I don't think it's the best direction to look necessarily, but I get it.
Yeah, and so you couldn't expect Colin Kaepernick. I believe at the time he was maybe 23, 24.
Yeah.
And he had been, you know, a pampered athlete his whole life. It's not like he really had a chance to discover himself. Here he's an independent man. He's trying to discover himself. He winds up in this situation. It's unfortunate because really nothing positive came out of that, and the person who ended up being hurt the most was him.
I have a lot of people migrated to New Hampshire from warmer climates, southern states, and been successful in acclimating to, the scene there. Like I usually tend bar. I've worked in restaurants a lot. Of just wondering about the whole shy movement and how accepting people are in the New Hampshire area of, just different cultures. How's the nightlife there? Is it a good Keene, New Hampshire, is a good party town?
Keene is not a party town. Keene is a quiet little...
They drink.
...little town. Keene is a quiet little town in the southwest corner of New Hampshire. There's not a whole lot that goes on here. It is a college town, so, you know, there's a bunch of college students here for about three quarters of the year or whatever. There are people who say that the nightlife is more of a thing in Manchester and Portsmouth. Portsmouth is sort of renowned as the music city. You know, there's a lot of, like, live music that
gets played out
there.
I say there's plenty of nightlife in Keene. It just may not be what you think of nightlife. Like, it's not a lot of dancing, but there's certainly lots of bars.
There's bars in all kinds of places.
I understand, but that's nightlife.
Okay. I've never heard anybody say Keene is a place. I'm just saying. I mean, I love Keene, and I'll defend Keene, you know, as a great place to live, but it's not the place where you go for nightlife in New Hampshire. That's what I'm told by people who come from Manchester and Portsmouth,
all right,
okay? Just having observed, having lived here now for, you know, 11, 12 years or whatever, I remember reading a story in the Keene Sentinel, not a story, but a letter to the editor, which is a local newspaper, written by a black woman who had actually moved up from our hometown, Mark, of Sarasota, Florida. And she wrote a letter saying that she was leaving because she felt as though she was being discriminated against on the streets of Keene. Now, I don't have that experience. I'm not black, so I don't know what that's like. I had to take her word for it from that particular article. But she was so frustrated that she ended up leaving Keene, and she cited this as her reason for leaving.
Did she say, like, what a specific – did she cite a specific
People
incident?
People were apparently, like, saying things to her on the streets.
Really?
Yeah, which was surprising to me because – so that's one person's experience.
Sure, okay.
Right? And then I met another guy who was kind of like the token black guy in Keene at the high school. He wasn't at high school anymore, but I met him through a friend of a friend here in town. And, and I sat with him and I said, you know, I told him the story about this woman's letter that I'd seen in the Sentinel. I said, you know, you grew up here. This lady had moved up from Florida. I said, you grew up here. What was it like for you being the only black guy at Keene High School?
Sure.
Because – where else are you going to experience, like, nasty behavior, right? Except for at a high school, right?
Middle school.
So, yeah, like, what was it like for you? And what he said to me was, he said it was fine. People treated him with respect. It was just, for them, the way he described it was, these people had only ever seen a black person on television. You and I met back at Anarchapulco in 2017. Mark, you and I were broadcasting from that event. I was given the opportunity to speak on stage B, which was the stage that wasn't like being recorded in any meaningful fashion. But you were one of the
people. You'll crawl up on a stage if you have the opportunity.
Right. If I get the chance to talk about New Hampshire to a group of libertarians, I'm going to talk about it.
And thank God you did.
Yeah.
Because I probably wouldn't be here had that was my first experience getting the full rundown of what was. I had heard of the Free State Project being a sort of around libertarians and whatnot, but it was not, it had never really been broken down and explained to me. And clearly, I mean, that's what you do.
Right.
And you did it so well that I was immediately, of all the things, clearly, it stood out to me more than almost anything else. And I was like, okay, this needs to get front of mind and on my radar. What's going on?
Yeah, you instantly wanted to learn more about it.
I did.
And you approached me after, I think it was right afterwards.
Yep.
And that's when I was like, oh, come on, we'll have you on Free Talk Live. We talked more about like what you do and Vin Armani show and your hit past with Showtime and all that. And that's what our interview was previously. And then you were nice enough to have me on your show, the Vin Armani show.
Which was great. Thank you.
And that's where we talked a lot more about what was going on with New Hampshire, some of the cool stuff that's happening here, which it's impossible to encapsulate in, you know, even an hour. There's just so much that happens here. It's more than I don't even know what all of it is, right? Like, I know I got my finger on, you know, the pulse of what's happening in Keene, maybe. But, you know, there's all these other people all over the state doing so much.
Until you experience it, you
can't really
appreciate just how comfortable you feel. And it's from that first moment, it's been nothing but, from the first moment of meeting you, it's been nothing but open arms and saying, come. And if you come, just ask for whatever you need, whatever support. So we'll find a way for you if you can get here, because we, you know, and it's not just been that for me. Everybody that I've talked to who's moved has said this is the exact reason why I'm doing it. And it has been so genuine. Just the community has been amazing, and it is nice to just to not feel
alone.
Like you have to pull like you have to pull any punches,
right,
you know, even just in your daily interactions, that it's like, oh, these are freedom loving people, and I feel at home, you know.
It turns out that the New Hampshire natives tend to be pretty freedom loving.
They
as
are.
Well.
They are. Yeah.
So it's not just the, you know, Free Staters or the Libertarians or whatever. The whole New Hampshire native community tends to lean towards freedom in general. So that's a nice thing to have as well. It's great, and the reason why the community is great is because it's large.
Yes.
You know, there's a large group of libertarians and voluntarists and however they describe themselves, anarchists, some of them describe themselves that way, that are here, and it just keeps getting bigger over time. And I think I said off the air, you know, the nice thing about being here is there's so many libertarians, you can be choosy about who you hang out with.
I'm a truck driver, and I come home about once every somewhere between a month and a half and 3 months, just depending on the time of year and what's going on.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah, Thank you for your service. Yeah, keep America rolling.
Yeah, that's what we do. So, yeah, I park my truck in front of my house, you know, and I live in kind of a small town, I guess you could say, about 30,000, smaller than I'm used to. And I just park my truck in front of my house. It's a big, wide street, you know. All we have in my neighborhood is on-street parking. There's no driveways where I live. And I've done it before. I've been doing it. I've been driving about 2 years now.
I don't think I've ever seen that. I've never seen a tractor trailer parallel parked.
It happens. Now, I don't have the trailer. I just have the truck when I go
right.
home. You know?
Right. Like, I don't even know what to call the truck. The truck. Again, big truck.
We call it Bobtail. That's trucker lingo. Bobtail.
Okay. Bobtail.
So
okay.
I had the Bobtail truck out there. Just no trailer in front of my house, and it's been there about 7 days now. This time around. And one of the nosy neighbors finally called in to the police, the men with guns, and had them come out and have me move my truck or get a ticket. So it irked me. You know, I realized I was breaking one of the city ordinances. I didn't know I was when I parked it there, but I realized, you know, I do now.
So where did you have to move it to? A parking lot or something where you rent a space? I mean, where do you have to keep it?
I moved it to another spot where I hope I don't get in trouble.
We went out to Portsmouth for the... There was a blockchain conference that actually happened there for the first time. It was the first time
last year.
In December.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So we went out there for that, and when we got there the first day, since the conference hadn't started, we broadcast from the store. So we set up our equipment there, and that was actually our second time doing that. We did that at their grand opening as well, which was a lot of fun. And it was so cool to just sit in that store and watch it happen. Right. Watch the customers come in. Asking questions, you know, total newbie questions about cryptocurrency, just because they'd seen the store, they wanted to learn about it, and listening to those conversations that were happening between the store clerk, you know, Derek J.
And
these customers, and it's like, man, it almost made me want to quit doing radio so I could just sit in that store all day and work there as, like, you know, one of their employees or manager or something like that, and have these conversations with people all day long, talking about cryptocurrency, helping people install their first wallet, talking with local business owners who've come in and said, you know what, I want to accept cryptocurrency. That happened while we were sitting in there. What inspired you to do a pirate radio station? Because that's a fairly unusual thing. You don't meet a whole lot of people who've done pirate radio, and even fewer of them are willing to admit it.
Well, I'm willing to admit it because I never got caught, right? And there was never anything with that. No, I've been a DJ, electronic music DJ, since I was a teenager, and I was heavy in the rave scene. I was raised in Southern California, which was big at that time. And as I said, I went to school in Washington, D.C. At that time, D.C. had, like, the best rave scene. But so I really kind of cut my teeth on drum and bass, and then got into a style called UK Garage, or it was called Two-Step at the time, and it was kind of the sound of working-class London. It was kind of like electronic R&B in a way. And so this is like 99 through maybe about 2003 that was what I was doing. And we started a club in L.A. on Sundays at the top of this building on Sunset and Vine, 360 building, and we started having all of these acts come in from UK. And at the time, drum and bass had sort of started. Well, I'll say this: London has a long history of pirate radio, so this was very popular. The young
there's
set,
a movie about that.
There is indeed. They would throw these things up on the top of the tower blocks. And UK Garage in particular was huge with the pirate radio. And so these guys would tell us all about these pirate radio stations. And then, so we were like, okay, this is cool.
Yeah. You never got a visit from the FCC?
Never did. Our transmitter got stolen from out of – I actually ended up sort of like sticking it up in a random shack at a tower location that where other radio stations and cell phone towers and things were. It was just, kind of like pirated our way in there. One of the doors was open. It had electricity.
No
we shot
way.
Shot it. Yeah, but the guy who told me that the place existed was a bit of a hater. And
he and
I kind of had a falling out, and he was the only other person who knew where it was, and I think he went up and stole our transmitter. So
that's plausible.
It was a great run. We had a lot of great DJs on there. Our drive time host, actually, was Juan Atkins, who's the inventor of Detroit Techno. He's an electronic music legend, and so we got a lot of press on other radio stations, even.
No
we
kidding.
Had write-ups in papers, even national papers. So it was really, really interesting.
That's amazing that you got press and the FCC didn't come and do anything about it.
That's amazing.
Well, one of the things that I always thought was key about it was we never bled over onto 88.1, which was the closest one.
You always want to be a good neighbor on
good neighbor.
The radio spectrum.
And I made sure that we only broadcast after business hours of the FCC. So I figured if
bureaucrats aren't going to work late.
Bureaucrats don't work late, and we never broadcast it from a home. And even if they had triangulated to that building, there would have been no way for them to get in.
Let's talk Bitcoin Pizza Day, because you just had some pizza, Mark, just a moment ago.
It was quite good.
From Little Zoe's, which if you've actually been to the Porcupine Freedom Festival, which is a yearly summertime camping liberty festival here in New Hampshire, they've been providing the hot pizza there for a couple of years.
Nice.
And they take cryptocurrency. And, of course, they're here in Keene is actually where they're based out of. So we all – not we all, but some of us, some of the crypto people in the area went there today to celebrate Bitcoin Pizza Day. Now, Vin, can you explain what Bitcoin Pizza Day is?
I can. In 2010, the first recorded exchange, I guess, that anybody knows of a good for Bitcoin happened, and I guess May 22nd, 2010, and it was 10,000 bitcoins in exchange for two pizzas, two Papa John's pizzas. So I guess two guys were on the Bitcoin talk forum, and they organized this thing. One of them went out and bought the Papa John's pizzas, brought it to the other guy, exchanged for 10,000 bitcoins. $83 million today.
Today. A year ago, it was $25 million.
Well, that's that's still pretty good for two pizzas. Come
if
on,
he
man.
Held on to it. I hope he did.
Rejected. I don't have to trust the Federal Reserve Bank. I don't have to trust the European Central Bank. I don't have to trust the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank. I don't have to trust these organizations. I don't, by the way.
Yeah.
And you know, this money is now kept in a way that protects the little guy.
Yeah, it's a huge paradigm shift. I was explaining this to somebody today, a landscaper who was interested in taking cryptocurrency, just how big of a paradigm shift it really is. And I think it's still something many people haven't grasped, and I don't even know if we have yet, just how big of a change this is to go from the centrally controlled money, which is issued by governments and banks and has been for generations, for as long as anybody can remember, to go to something like that, this top-down control system, to a completely decentralized system where the people themselves are the ones who are in control, where the creator himself or herself, nobody even knows who Satoshi Nakamoto is. We have no idea who
that
person is.
Maybe one of the most powerful aspects of this whole thing, and it may not have taken off if there wasn't this sort of nebulous,
the mystery,
certainly mysterious, enigmatic figure at the top, because then we really can all feel like we're partial owners of this thing, you know, that there's no head of this and
no
we're the
blame.
Heads. Yes, exactly. It's fantastic.
Did you ever spend cryptocurrency in Vegas?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like at
absolutely.
A physical location, like.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Okay. There's Vegas is actually very, very crypto friendly.
That's what we've heard.
Yeah, there are actually two-way ATMs in several of the casinos.
Okay.
Planet Hollywood, Golden Dragon, I think it's called. It's a brand new one, and the D downtown. Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
Didn't Mike Tyson have branded Bitcoin ATMs there too?
He did, and I know the guy who basically did that branding with him, and he and some partners actually opened up a cryptocurrency friendly strip club called Legends Room.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's actually there and running.
Is it really a strip club if you can't shove a buck in their drawers?
One of the challenges in the world of cryptocurrency is ease of use. How do we bring people who are used to credit cards, who are used to dollars, used to these old systems, how do we introduce them to this in a way that's understandable, in a way that you don't have to sit there and explain to them how mining works and, why it is that there's fees? And how easy can this be made? It's a lot easier now than it was 10 years ago, but it's still probably too hard for, some grandmothers to get a hold of. So, when can it get to grandmother level easy? I don't know.
That's what we're trying with my new company. I think we may have reached that point.
Let's talk about what you're doing, because I had seen this on the Reddit for Reddit r/BTC. It's one of the places where a lot of the Bitcoin Cash people tend to hang out, because the /Bitcoin one tends to be censored. And so they've gone to this other place where they can talk without being censored. And I've seen people talking about Cointext.
Yes.
Cointext.io.
That's correct.
And it is texting for cryptocurrency?
It is.
Tell me about
well,
this.
I just sent you a dollar.
I love Bitcoin, and it saddens me that it is so difficult to spend it. I spent a little bit today because I gave a guy his first cryptocurrency today, and I still like to give out Bitcoin.
It's difficult to spend?
It's hard to spend. What I mean by that is it's hard to justify with the fees that the Bitcoin costs.
Right.
It's difficult.
What are the fees now? They got down
40 cents.
Yeah, that's high if you're doing like, you know, $4 or $5 or something like that.
I went the other day in downtown Keene, and I bought a newspaper at Corner News, which is the shop that was the first physical location in Keene to start accepting Bitcoin back in 2013.
Oh, wow.
And bought a newspaper. I paid in Dash, and it cost me a cent to send that transaction.
Probably less.
Roundabouts. Yeah. A lot of times it's as much as a cent, but whatever.
Okay, fair enough.
Or maybe they're rounding up. I don't know. You know, whatever. So 1 cent, no big deal. 40 cents?
Yeah.
No one's going to do that. Nobody's going to buy a dollar soda at the local corner store. Nobody's going to buy, a $2 newspaper if it's a 40-cent fee. Because with cryptocurrency, for people who are unfamiliar, the person who's sending the transaction pays the fee.
That's right.
Unlike a credit card transaction where the merchant has to pay a 3% fee, that comes out of their profits. So they build that cost into the profit of the item, and it's, ultimately it's transparent to the user. But in cryptocurrency, the user has to make a choice. Which crypto do I want to spend? Do I want to spend the one that's going to cost me 40 cents? Go to bitcoinfees.info. That's the current today. That's what it's going to send you generally. Now, there's some differences depending on the size of the bytes in the transaction or whatever, and it could be a little bit higher, it could be a little bit lower, but the typical transaction, 40 cents. Then you've come up with something because you're a programmer in addition to a talk show host and television star. You've put together cointext.io. We've been testing it here in the studio that makes it – it cuts out a lot of the steps for getting somebody involved in cryptocurrency. Now, it's not the prettiest thing in the world because it's just text messaging.
Just text messages.
But it works.
Yeah.
And you can text cryptocurrency, in this case Bitcoin Cash, is what you're launching with at least.
That's right.
You can text cryptocurrency to anybody with a phone number. So you don't have to have the – if anybody's been doing crypto, every wallet address is this long string of – obtuse numbers and letters that no one could possibly remember.
Yep.
You have to always copy and paste, and you got to be very careful. You get the whole thing
right.
Whereas now you can just use somebody's phone number.
That's right.
And text them cryptocurrency. It's their own wallet. They have. Yep. They're the only one that has access to it.
That's right.
And they could send it to their other wallets.
It's also seamless because it doesn't look like a wallet. It just looks like
just
a text message. Yeah.
And it's we're really trying to roll out to the developing world in particular. In Africa, there is a company called M-Pesa.
Right.
They do about 6 billion, billion with a B,
yep,
transactions a year in 10 African countries. It's one of the most popular methods for, and a lot of these people are unbanked, and so they've got an M-Pesa account, but that's all through SMS. So you mentioned that you don't need to have a long address, but some of the other things you don't need to have, you don't need to have a smartphone.
You can do a dumb phone with this. Yeah,
sure.
As long as you're texting.
And
this is the invention we were asking for four years ago. Yes. When we talked about
it. And let me step it even further, you don't have to have internet.
Now,
you don't have to have you don't have to have mobile internet to send an SMS message.
I don't know what he
has. You just have to have phone service. Cell phone signal.
Okay.
That's it.
So you don't have the data, but you get the cell phone.
Yes, correct. Exactly.
Okay. Correct.
I thought you were going to say like these cell phones somehow do a mesh network.
You don't have to have access to the internet.
Right. And that's critical here, that you can bring cryptocurrency to not only the unbanked, which is historically – one of the targets of Bitcoin was people living in poor countries.
That's right.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.